Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is the Soundcheck Podcast.
Fish in the sea, you know how I feel. River running free, you know how I feel.
This is Soundcheck, I'm John Schaefer. Nina Simone is having a moment. True, it's coming 12 years after her death, but suddenly Nina Simone is a hot film property. The soul, gospel, jazz, R&B singer and pianist is the subject of a forthcoming biopic, a forthcoming documentary, and a documentary that's already done. It's called What Happened, Miss Simone, and it'll be opening this month. The director is Liz Garbus, and she joins me here in the Soundcheck studio. Liz, welcome.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
Did all of you, were you all aware of each other at the time that you were making your films?
Honestly, when you say that there's a forthcoming documentary, I thought you were talking about us. So
yeah, there's the amazing Nina Simone.
Yeah, so the answer is the biopic that you reference, in which Zoe Saldana is cast as Nina Simone. Of course, I knew about this film. There's been a lot of controversy about it. The other film I was not aware of when I was making this film. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I started this project about 2 years ago, and Nina's presence in the cultural zeitgeist has really changed since then. And you know, our film hasn't come out yet, so we can take no responsibility for that,
right.
Although I'd love to.
But, I mean, it does seem like there's something in the air that, you know, there's so much interest now.
Yeah, like when I went into Starbucks, it's Nina Simone. It's interesting. She is maybe, you know, she's an artist we need right now. And today's artists have been kind of calling on her as an inspiration in the way that you can kind of combine musical prowess and excellence and unforgettableness, if that's a word, and political action. And, you know, at the Oscars, Common and John Legend gave a shout out to Nina Simone and quoted her from a quote that's in our film, an artist's duty is to represent the times.
Right.
And so that's maybe a mantra or a call to action that feels very appropriate for today's climate in which, you know, a movement is being reignited on the streets.
Now, your film is called What Happened, Miss Simone. Tell us where that title comes from.
Finding titles for films is often this very circuitous journey. And a wonderful thing happened kind of late into the editing phase of this film where I came across a 1970 Red Book article written by none other than Dr. Maya Angelou. And in 1970, Nina was gone. She had vanished from the scene in the United States. She had been such a presence and a leader in the civil rights movement. And then she left after the assassination of King and the loss of so many other leaders, Malcolm X, Fred Hampton, Medgar Evers, so many other leaders of the civil rights movement. And Dr. Angelou was asking, what happened, Miss Simone? Where are you, Miss Simone?
Right. So it's almost like, you know, Paul Simon calling out to Jolton Joe DiMaggio, where have you gone, you know?
It's exactly like that. And, of course, Nina had a resurgence later on. And part of that resurgence was fueled by a Chanel ad, which played My Baby Just Cares For Me.
My baby don't care for shows. My baby don't care for clothes. My baby just cares for me. My baby don't care for cars and races. My baby don't care for.
But there was a period in which this larger-than-life, huge star, Nina Simone from the 60s, really disappeared from the scene.
Of course, you can take the title another way. Literally, what happened, Miss Simone? And there are various answers, not many of them pleasant, although, fortunately, a lot of the music is terrific. But, you know, there is certainly a kind of a dark side, which we can talk about in a moment, but we wouldn't be talking about her at all if it weren't for that voice.
That's right.
And there's a wonderful moment in the film where Nina Simone talks about the kind of malleability, the elasticity of her instrument.
When I
I was interested in was conveying an emotional message, which means using everything you've got inside you sometimes to barely make a note, or if you have to strain to sing, you sing. So sometimes I sound like gravel, and sometimes I sound like coffee and cream.
So baby, love me tonight.
The one and only Nina Simone. Man, that voice.
Yeah. You know, it's... Well, you know, what she says is, you know, if you have to use everything you have to barely make a note. And, you know, and that's what, even in when she's, you know, when she's singing these love songs or these jazz standards, you feel everything she has, even in the soft part of her voice. And then, of course, there's the aggressive, like, you know, pay attention part of her voice, which she calls, you know, the gravel. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, but in either case, she's using everything she has.
Right.
Even if it's soft.
Do you get the impression that for Nina Simone, performing music, that music was kind of an outlet for something that she couldn't otherwise express?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, when you watch the film, you'll learn that Nina was a classically trained pianist. She had no intention of becoming a vocalist. She had no intention of singing and performing in clubs. This was not her life vision. She was a child prodigy who trained with a Russian immigrant in her small town of North Tryon, North Carolina. And she became, you know, a virtuoso pianist, came to New York, studied at Juilliard. Then the money ran out, and she started playing in clubs in Atlantic City. And the bar owner said to her, look, if you want to make a, you know, if you want to stay here, you better sing. And that's when Nina Simone became Nina Simone.
Right,
that's when Eunice Wayman turned into Nina Simone.
Because she didn't want mom and dad to know that
she was singing the devil's music in bars. Her mother was a minister. And so Eunice Wayman, which was her birth name, was quickly shed for the cover of Nina Simone.
And there's a moment early on in the film, and this is really the reason I asked this question about, you know, music being an outlet for her, where she's asked about what is being free? Mm. What does freedom mean to you? And the answer is a pretty telling one.
Mm. I've had a couple of times on stage when I really felt free. And that's something else. That's really something else. I'll tell you what freedom is to me. No fear. I mean, really, no fear. If I could have that half of my life, no fear.
I wish I could share.
Simone singing, I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free, and talking about freedom. From the film What Happened, Miss Simone, the documentary by Liz Garbus, opening at IFC, and then it'll be available on Netflix as of June 26th. And for Nina Simone, I mean, Liz, you mentioned Common and John Legend shouting out to her at the Academy Awards, you know, the need for an artist who represents the spirit and the zeitgeist of the times. For Nina Simone in the 60s, that whole question of freedom, it wasn't just a personal thing. It was a kind of a social thing, too.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, from this upbringing as a classically trained musician and then, you know, sort of making a huge splash on the scene with I Love You, Porgy in 1959, in the early to mid-60s, she has a political awakening, and she is part of this incredible scene in New York, which includes Langston Hughes, James Baldwin, Lorraine Hansberry, Stokely Carmichael, Miriam Makeba, and she has this political awakening, and she writes Mississippi Goddamn one day, and it's this outpouring, I think, of of this, you know, the life that she led growing up in the Jim Crow South and of her outrage about the church bombings in Birmingham, Alabama. And then I think for her, everything came together. I think that the career of being a entertainer, a jazz singer, which was the career that was being offered to her as the singer of Porgy, was not something that was tenable for Nina Simone.
There's an interesting moment early on in her story where she plays the Newport Folk Festival. And, you know, her longtime musical director, her guitarist, Al Shackman, is like, well, she wasn't sure she even wanted to do it.
That's right. But and she had that feeling about festivals. And that was a jazz festival. And she had that feeling about jazz festivals throughout her entire career.
Yeah.
That every time she went, she said, this is the last one. You know, I'm not going to do this again.
But there she is at Newport singing a folk song. She's singing Little Eliza Jane.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So those oppositional forces are constantly at work, which is what made her such an interesting artist.
Yeah. So she doesn't want to be just an entertainer. She, you know, she talks about the genesis of Mississippi Goddamn in the film. Let's listen.
When the kids got killed being that church, that did it.
First you get depressed, and after that you get mad. And when these kids got bombed, I just sat down and wrote this song. And it's a very moving, violent song. That's how I feel about the whole thing.
Alabama's gotten me so upset. Tennessee made me lose my rest. Everybody knows about Mississippi Goddamn. Can't you see it? I know you can feel it. It's all in the air. I can't stand this.
So that's Mississippi Goddamn, song that Nina Simone wrote and recorded and, you know, has become one of her kind of signature tunes. There is a moment, Liz, in the film where you have her on the march from Montgomery to Selma, and she sings another version of the song. So she inserts the word Selma.
I'm so glad that you've pointed that out, yeah.
And the crowd goes wild.
Yeah.
You know, and so there she is, kind of on the front lines, with a song that by her own admission is violent. And there's an interesting moment in the film where she talks about going to Martin Luther King and saying, I'm not nonviolent. And she really wasn't.
No, she really wasn't. I mean, she had violence inside of her, in her personal life as well as in her political life. I mean, that was a factor in her entire existence. You know, the Selma thing is incredible, and it's a great moment. And I'm so happy you've pointed it out, because I think in the film you can kind of not, if you don't know the song that well, you can miss it. But I think that's exactly why Nina is being called out today by the commons and the legends. It's because she was so raw and honest and direct and unafraid. And we all know how, in fact, you know, how much jeopardy those artists were in, those artists who played Selma, that it was an incredibly dangerous time.
Yeah. There were, speaking of violence, there was violence in the marriage. There were many men in her life. But you focus on her second husband, who was her longtime manager.
That's right.
Andrew Stroud. You talked about her being out of the country around 1970. Wasn't she like in Barbados at that point?
That's right. There was a sort of, you know, there was some journeying years there after she left the U.S. She was in the Barbados, and she did have a love affair there with the prime minister.
Yeah.
He had a nice house on the beach. She liked it.
Yeah.
But
as I say, you know, those men, they don't really get mentioned at all except for Andrew. So what do you make of the tension, the dynamic between the two of them?
Yeah, well, that interview was actually done. He's passed away. That interview with him was done with his daughter, Lisa, Simone Kelly. And it was sitting in storage. And I was lucky enough.
So she had done the interview with him.
She had spoken to her father. They had tried to embark on making a film about their lives together with Nina after Nina was gone, but Andy was still alive. And I think that was probably just too tough to finish. And so those tapes, were kept by another producer and shared with us, which was incredible because nobody had heard Andy's version of the 60s with Nina. And yes, there was a tremendous amount of violence in that marriage. He cops to it, pun intended. You know, he was a New York City police officer who left the force, sergeant, New York City police sergeant who left the force to manage Nina Simone. And he was a great manager. Lisa, their daughter, refers to him as the original Puff Daddy. I mean, he was a great businessman, but he was also a, you know, as again, as Lisa said, he could be a bully.
Right. And somebody, I think it's Al, says she kind of felt like a thoroughbred, you know, a racehorse who was being trotted out and, you know, made to perform whenever Andrew wanted her to. And so resentment builds. And then, as Nina Simone puts it, Andrew starts hitting her.
Andrew protected me against everybody but himself. He wrapped himself around me like a snake. I worked like a dog, and I was scared of him. And Andrew beat me up. I've never talked to you about this, but he beat me up. I was deadly scared of Andrew.
I put a spell on you. Cause you're mine.
One time early in the morning, like 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, the phone rings. It's Nina. And she needed to hide out.
So that is the voice of Al Shackman, her longtime guitar, who refers to Nina as his sister on several occasions in the film. So there's violence in the marriage, but in one of the most kind of stunning moments for me in the film, you have access to her written diaries. And there's a diary entry where she writes, and it's right there on the screen, I love physical violence.
She loved, that's what she wrote. Yeah, she was engaged in the violence. I mean, there was something in that relationship that kept her there. He was tough, he was a cop, and he could be violent, and she went in to it meeting that violence often at times with her own violence. So it's not a clear victimizer relationship. Of course, it's complicated. He's stronger than her. He is more adept and had more practice at beating people up than she did. And so often, you know, she could be at the losing end of it, but she stayed there, and there was something that kept her there beyond what you might think of in a more typical domestic violence situation. She was engaged in it in some way.
Yeah. The film is What Happened, Miss Simone, looking at the life and career of the great Nina Simone. Liz Garbus is the director here with me on Soundcheck. And again, the film opens at IFC here in New York and then will be available everywhere as of June 26th on Netflix. The birth of Lisa is kind of a turning point. And Lisa is one of the other voices that takes us through this story. It seems like, well, first, let me play this clip, Liz, from your film. This is Nina Simone remembering the day that Lisa's born.
The first 3 hours after Lisa was born were the most peaceful in my life. And I was in love with the world.
And Andrew was there, and he was sitting right there. And he said, I said, how's the baby? He says, how's the mother? I loved him for that. I loved being a mother. Right. I was a good mother. I was a goddamn good mother.
I was a goddamn good mother. You're laughing, Liz Garbus.
Well, that, you know, I say that to my kids too.
Well, let's get in the other side of the story. This is her daughter, Lisa.
One time we were in public somewhere. I did something and she went off on me in front of everybody. And I didn't show any emotion because when mom would see you cry, she knew she could push your buttons. That's what she wanted. And I would not give her that satisfaction. When she would hit me, I would look her dead in her face. And she'd like, you better cry. You better cry.
So I'm a good goddamn mother, but then there's this kind of record of abusive behavior.
Right. And I think it's interesting to think about it in the context of who Nina Simone is. I mean, there's never an excuse for violence. But, you know, growing up, as she did in this kind of glass box in the Jim Crow South, as this prodigy embraced by white and black, but you're kind of walking a tightrope because you're being raised sort of in the white community, but you're still a black girl.
Right.
And then...
So she's an outsider in both communities.
She's an outsider in both communities. So think about the kind of rage that boils within there. And then think about, you know, the kind of the abandonment of those dreams, of that all of that training, that Juilliard education that then got had to sort of be sublimated for this typical jazz singer route that she really didn't appreciate and she thought was a racist role for the African-American female performer. And then being involved in the civil rights movement and all the violence against black people that she is witnessing and part of, she wants to engage in that in a more violent way, actually. She was, you know, she told her husband, I want to arm myself and get a gun and meet violence with violence. And he convinced her not to, saying her music was a more powerful weapon to inspire people. But so there's a tremendous amount. I think we have to look at the outside of Nina as we consider the inside and think about the impact that the movement and the times and the violence of the times has on a human being who's involved in it.
Right. There is another striking moment in the film. You have footage of her leading a rally where she's saying, are you willing to kill if necessary?
That's right.
You know, it's pretty chilling stuff. And she does talk about feeling this kind of compulsion to take on, you know, to be more than the entertainer, as you were saying before. And there's a very telling line in this clip that you might miss if you're not looking for it, but there's a kind of a hint of the dual personalities of Eunice / Nina.
It's something that I have chosen to do, and I have felt compelled to do it. So it is my role, but sometimes I wish it wasn't. I think that the artists who don't get involved in preaching messages probably are happier. But you see, I have to live with Nina, and that is very difficult. Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, no one can always be an angel. When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Nina Simone. I mean, Liz, when I heard that line, I have to live with Nina. It was like, these days, you know, we know about things like borderline personality disorder and bipolar 1 and 2, et cetera. But back then, people wouldn't have known she didn't know what to do with this.
No, and in fact, her husband tells us that in the late 60s, he took her to Columbia Presbyterian Hospital here in New York, and they did a battery of tests on her, and they came back saying, giving her a clean bill of health. And this was a woman who had, you know, a manic work ethic, a manic sex drive, a manic, you know, kind of disposition towards violence, as we talked about, and extreme depression. I mean, she wrote in her diaries about being suicidal and, you know, she didn't know that she would live past the 60s. I mean, she was very depressed. And, you know, and those of us today looking at that can say, oh, I could probably think of, you know, that there's something going on there. And yet you hear her struggle with it. I mean, in that interview, she sounds so tired.
Yeah.
And she's saying, I have to live with Nina. And it's yeah, you know, you feel for her.
Yeah, and you almost wonder, well, who's speaking here?
Right.
You know, is there a little
Eunice yeah,
so who's still, you know, a little voice in her head from her childhood that's
telling her she's got to be something other than what she is. And Al Shackman, who spent, you know, an enormous amount of time with her, talked about her that way, that there was like a, you know, a switch that got flipped and there was somebody else there who wasn't there 5 minutes ago.
Right.
And yeah, and so it was a really, you know, it's amazing that she survived. You know, there are so many artists who were as involved as she was who didn't survive.
Right. Eventually, she's diagnosed, I think it's in Europe, with bipolar,
yeah,
and gets some medication. Was there any evidence of drugs, whether prescribed or not, before that?
We heard stories about her using drugs and alcohol. I don't think, and I, you know, one can imagine that was a way of self-medicating, and getting through the mania that she did feel. But, you know, she wasn't sort of, she wasn't overtaken by that.
Mm-hmm. She was an erratic performer at times, and even, you know, post-medication. It wasn't like Nina Simone was suddenly chill.
That's right. No. That's not the word people would use.
And
but she would show up.
She would show up.
That was
And she would demand that you show up.
That's right.
And that you be kind of fully present.
That's right.
And there's this wonderful moment. It's at one of the jazz festivals. This is later in her career. She's gone through hell and high water, and she's come back, and she's performing, and then suddenly she's not performing.
Stars, they come and go. They come fast, they come slow. They go like the last light of the sun, all in a blaze. Hey, girl, sit down. Sit down. Sit down. Stars, they come and go. They come fast, they come slow.
So that's a Janis Ian song called Stars, which Nina Simone is sort of performing, and then, you know, sees somebody getting up, and you hear the nervous laughter of the audience, and they realize she's serious.
Yeah,
she really wants that girl to sit back down.
And the show's not going to continue until she does. Well, you know, she talks earlier on in the film about, you know, I expected them to behave the way they would at Carnegie Hall or in a classical concert, you know, sit in their seats and listen. And I don't know what the rules are on the radio, but, you know, she says if they don't listen, they should get the out, you know.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
That was her view. And you know what? I mean, how radical was that for an African-American female performer to kind of demand that attention? That was what made her, you know, it's today we think about, you know, artists kind of doing whatever they want on stage. But for her to do that at that time was really revolutionary. And it also made, you know, people also loved it. It was theater, too.
Mm.
And I imagine that Nina was aware of the kind of the theater, the theatrical effect that, you know, I'm sure sometimes it was out of her control what she was saying. And I think other times she knew it was a great show.
Right. But maybe that was the difference pre and post medication was, you know, sometimes you got the impression that maybe she wasn't in charge of the theatricality, that it was kind of happening to her.
That's
at the
right.
same time it was happening to the audience.
That's right. I think, of course, yeah, sometimes she'd be overcome with a rage. And other times, I think she was using it for theater and great performance.
So if someone comes up to you and says, "What happened, Miss Simone?" and you have one answer to give, what do you tell people happened to Miss Simone?
What happened, Miss Simone, is, you know, is being a prodigy in the Jim Crow South and the sort of strange upbringing that created. What happened was a thwarted classical career and the plate of being a jazz singer not being the right plate. What happened was the civil rights movement, which disappointed her and didn't accomplish the goals that she hoped it would accomplish. What happens was it was a marriage with violence. What happened was motherhood that she felt she could never live up to the idea of what a mother should be. So everything happened to Nina, and then on top of all of that, mental illness. So you've got to be a pretty strong psyche to withstand all of that, all of those tensions.
And she lived to be 70.
She lived to be 70. Thank goodness we got a long career out of Nina Simone, all of us fans.
And there are so many of us, Nina Simone fans, a number that seems to grow constantly. The film is called What Happened, Miss Simone, directed by Liz Garbus. June 26th, it goes to Netflix. It'll be available on demand everywhere. Liz, thank you so much for being with us on Soundcheck today.
Thank you for having me.
Get instant updates from Soundcheck anytime by following us on Facebook and Twitter. We'll tell you when you can listen to live performances happening in our studio, when we've got new interviews up for you to hear, and when we post new videos online. We're on Twitter at Soundcheck and on Facebook at facebook.com/WNYC Soundcheck.
Please hide me run to the rock. Hat me, Lord, all on them day. But the rock right out. I can't hide you, the rock right out. I can't hide you, the rock right out. I ain't gonna hide you down. All on them day. I said, Rock, what's the matter with you, Rock? Don't you see